Elon Musk, please do join me. Such a pleasure. Oh. So,
glad
welcome.
To be here. Hello, everyone.
Let me start. Tell us how you think about trust.
Well, I believe in trust and transparency and the pursuit of truth in general. But I mean, first, let me just take a moment to say thank you for inviting me, and it's an incredible honor to be here. I love Norway. So, I just wanted to thank the leaders and the people of Norway for their longstanding support of electric vehicles and sustainable energy. And I just want the people of Norway to know that hey, you really made a difference. And I thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us. But I'm still going to come back to the question. Okay. Tell me, how do you think about trust?
Well, I think there's, that's really quite a philosophical question.
It is.
And one could wax on at length about that. We're talking about Twitter.
I was told that's the one topic I'm not to talk about, so I'm going to avoid it.
No, they both start with a T, I suppose. I do think that with respect to information, generally people want to know that the information that they're receiving is accurate, that it is a representative of the full picture, and they want to be able to believe what they read and not feel that it's overly biased, or at least understand the nature of the bias. So I think one of the key things to trust is transparency, for people to really know, if there's like a social media company or something, to understand what the algorithm is. So to open source the algorithm so people can look at it and critique it, and it's not a black box. And then if there are any modifications done by people at that social media company, that they're clear and, again, transparent, and so it's not hidden. I believe in the sort of free flow of ideas and just generally erring on the side of free speech within the boundaries of the law.
Within the boundaries of the law. It's a great place to start, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think you can't go sort of beyond that without being arrested, I think.
Yeah. Let's move on, shall we? You've been a great disruptor of technological models in energy and space. Where is the unexplored area for disruption?
Well, I find the word disruption... I don't aim to disrupt for the sake of disrupting, it's more like there's thinking about what set of actions are most likely to lead to a better future. Mm-hmm. And so, one of the things, obviously, in order for humanity to have a compelling future for civilization is that we must have a clear path to a sustainable energy future. That's one of the things that I think everyone, I think, would agree with. I am not someone who would tend to sort of demonize oil and gas, to be clear. This is necessary right now or civilization could not function. So I do think we actually need, at this time, more oil and gas, not less. Mm-hmm. But simultaneously moving as fast as we can to a sustainable energy economy. And I thought the words of the Prime Minister were just spot on. I'm glad to hear that there's a large effort for ocean wind, because that's a massive untapped potential. I would say go even more than what the Prime Minister said, frankly. It's like if you did 100 by 100 array of 10 megawatt systems, you'd have 100 gigawatt capability. You do need to combine that with stationary storage, battery packs, to buffer the energy, because sometimes the wind blows and sometimes it doesn't blow. Well, it doesn't blow as hard. And so you need to buffer it with battery packs, stationary battery packs, and Tesla and other companies are also making that. So that the sort of the three pillars of a sustainable energy future are sustainable energy generation, which is hydro, geothermal, wind, solar. I'm also pro-nuclear. I think we should really keep going with the nuclear plants. I know this may be an unpopular view in some quarters, but I think if you have a well-designed nuclear power plant, you should not shut it down, especially right now. But I try to say what I think is scientifically cogent, even if it is not popular. So the pillars are sustainable energy generation, but then must also store the energy, because many of the two main sources of sustainable energy, wind and solar, are intermittent. Mm-hmm. The wind doesn't always blow, mm-hmm. the sun doesn't always shine, so you must buffer the energy in stationary battery packs. And then the third element, obviously, is electric vehicles. So electric cars, trucks, aircraft, boats, with the ironic exception of rockets. But we do have a plan for sustainably producing the rocket propellant, which is actually almost 80% liquid oxygen. So liquid oxygen you can get from the atmosphere, and then we're going with a methane fuel, which is 20% of the propellant, but that you can make also sustainably long term from CO2 and water, H2O, which produces CH4 and O2. So that's the sort of sustainable long-term path for rocket propellant generation. And that's how it would have to be done on Mars, for example.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So not electrifying quite yet.
We do actually have sustainable power generation for some of our propellant generation already, but it's a small percentage now, but it will be a big percentage in the future.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you, you've got, I was about to say the energy industry here, but that's probably an exaggeration. You've got a, pretty significant set of the energy industry here. If you were to look ahead 5, 10, 15 years, what is the disruption going to look like in the energy industry?
Well, I think we'll see tremendous change over the next 5, 10, or 15 years. I'd say, if you say by 2030, I would say probably half of all new cars made will be electric.
2030, half of all new cars.
That's
electric.
My guess, yeah.
Okay.
By 2035, it might be 80% or something like that. I think it could be even higher than those numbers, but the car industry is moving rapidly towards electric, and one country after another and one state after another is are making zero emission mandates. California recently passed a zero emission mandate. New cars sold in California, I think 2035, can only be zero emission. So
the UK is as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's clearly the people of the Earth.
Yeah.
People of Earth have decided this is the way to go. So we'll see quite a tremendous change in that regard. And if you look at the streets of Norway, you actually see an advanced version of that because Norway has some of the highest. Norway's, I believe, gone to majority electric vehicles of new cars sold. Yeah. Which is great. Again, thank you. So it's pretty cool.
So if I pick up on that idea, so the future, the biggest change you see for the energy industry is electrification, electric car vehicles, light transport, maybe heavy transport. What does that mean about supply chains? So if you kind of roll that backwards, what is the supply chain going to be? What are you worried about if we're going to meet that rise?
Yeah, so the interesting thing is that you say, like, what are the limiting factors governing the rate at which the world can transition to sustainable energy? And I think it's the rate at which one can grow battery production.
Okay.
So then if you say, well, what are the constituents in the battery, in lithium-ion batteries, it's you've obviously got lithium. You've got a cathode, which is the main cathode materials are going to be a metal, and that's nickel, manganese, and iron. And on the anode side, it's primarily carbon, graphite. So in a sense, you're sequestering a little bit of carbon in the battery. and with some silicon added for energy density on the anode side. And then there's the electrolyte and whatnot. So the main limitation is actually not that these metals are exceptionally rare, but that there's a tremendous amount of processing equipment to take the ore and turn it into battery-grade materials. Because the battery-grade anode and cathode have to be extremely pure in order for the battery to last for a long time. And so it's sort of processing of those elements. And I'm sort of writing this sort of master plan part three, which is what are the steps needed to scale sustainable energy, and again, what are the limiting factors, and how can we potentially accelerate these? So hopefully finish that in a month or two.
So do you want to give us a preview? What are the gating functions, if you will, that we need to get over? What are the big steps?
Well, the materials that I mentioned are really essential.
It's generation, it's processing.
Yes, there's not a raw material constraint. So there's actually a tremendous amount of lithium. Lithium's almost everywhere. It's one of the most common elements on Earth. So is iron, and so is carbon. And then on the iron, you usually combine phosphorus. So it's iron phosphate. So that'll probably be the biggest chemistry that's used. So it's not so much the raw materials as it is converting the raw materials into the highly purified form that can be used in batteries. And so that's a tremendous amount of processing needs to happen for that. At the sort of scale that is currently, comparable to the world oil and gas industry. So it's the scale is just tremendous. So this is all happening, and it's happening fast. It's just a question of what can we do to potentially accelerate that and make it go even faster. So it's all happening. It's just a question of when.
And are you going to give us the answer to that? What can we do to accelerate it to make it happen even faster? If we're going to be 50% new electric vehicles sold in 8 years, you said.
I think that's actually where we're trending.
Okay.
Even if we just keep doing the things we're currently doing.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's pretty good.
You don't see a limiting function at the moment.
No, I don't see a limiting function. It's really just how many years will it take us, and all the actions we can, what actions can we take to have it be faster? And it's going to be increasing the rate at which we can convert the ore into battery grade materials. That will set the rate at which we can build electric vehicles and stationary battery packs to capture solar and wind.
Okay.
So this is all, basically what I'm saying is this is an optimistic and positive message. I'm not suggesting at all complacency, but just saying that things are moving in a good direction. But obviously, if we can make them go even faster, that's better.
And a lot of this happens in China, right? At the moment, today.
So, yes.
Yes. So you said last year that you thought trust in China would improve post-COVID. So do you think that's happened? Do you see China as an investment opportunity today?
Well, Tesla is actually investing in production in China. So we have a large factory in Shanghai, and we are continuing to expand output and invest in that factory. But we're also investing in Europe with our factory just outside of Berlin, and in the US with our new factory just outside of Austin.
Okay.
So, and we hope to announce a location for another gigafactory perhaps later this year. So we're going as fast as we can. And I've always said that when you look at Tesla, the fundamental good that Tesla does, I think it's not measured by profit, but rather by how many years will Tesla have accelerated the transition to sustainable energy. This is how okay. I think
this one should look. This is your measure of success.
Yes. And I think we have accelerated it to some degree already. I think if it wasn't for Tesla, the car industry would have transitioned to EVs much later. So
exponential curve or straight line?
It is an exponential curve, yes.
Okay. You're making me use my chemistry and my maths, which I haven't done in few decades.
Most people don't know what an exponential curve means, but it's a...
I think most people like in this room...
Maybe in this room, yes.
This room, they know, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so.
What about a logarithmic curve?
Now that's optimistic. Can you do it?
I think the things are improving exponentially with respect to sustainable energy. So,
okay.
But if we can make it go faster, all the better.
So how do we go from exponential to logarithmic?
Come on, you've
thought about this. I know you've thought about this.
Logarithmic is actually fast in the beginning but slow at the end. So I think it's following an S curve. So you have an exponential mm-hmm. increase, then linear, and then logarithmic. And that's basically how any transition, large industrial transition happens.
I think I'm going to get off math now because I could get into trouble. What's your approach to risk? How would you talk about that? I'm back to philosophy. I'm safer in philosophy.
Well, I think it,
because I
don't sort of like just arbitrarily seek risk. I think there's, some things are risky, but if the stakes are important enough, then you take the risk.
And today the stakes are important enough.
Yes, I mean the stakes are extremely important, very fundamental to the future. Yes.
Because you take, I'm guessing, I'm just, I don't know everybody in this room, but my guess is that you take significantly more risk than possibly anybody in this room, but certainly more than 95% of the people in this room. What allows you to take those risks? Are you faster? Are you smarter? Do you think differently? What do you do differently that allows you to do something that most people here, smart as they are, can't do?
Well, I think there's probably a lot of people in this room that do take a lot of risks, but...
Well, we've got a volunteer, but okay. But before you, I really like, no, I want to hear what Elon has to say about how he takes risks.
Anyway, I literally just try to use a scientific method, frankly, and, consider the, what is the importance of the outcome and what is one risking in order to achieve that outcome. But like I said, if the outcome is important enough, even if the probability of success is low, one must, I think, still do it.
Still do it.
In my view, some things are very important, and in order to have a good future, and if we don't do them, well, then we're in big trouble. And so, then how much of a risk really is it? Because if we don't take those actions, we won't have a good future. And I think the riskiest thing would be no action.
So it's almost as though it's really not a risk, it's not a choice at all.
Not really, yeah.
Okay. I think it's wonderful that you can change the world, because you really can change the world, and you have. You have the ability to do what, in many cases, not even governments can do. I mean, I as I was doing a little bit of research for this panel, one of the data points that I saw is you were able to turn on, if you will, the internet in Ukraine in just 4 hours. What kind of responsibility do you feel as a corporate leader you have when you have that kind of power? How do you think
about
that?
Well, I think it was a bit longer than 4 days, but it was about 4 hours, about 4 days, I think. But we did have some guess that maybe there would be something happening in Ukraine, and so we did preposition some Starlink terminals there just in case. That was helpful for the initial part of the invasion, and then we accelerated delivery of a lot of terminals within a few days of the invasion taking place. The Ukrainian government tells me it's been very helpful.
Yeah. Forethought is the answer, perhaps.
I mean, forethought and just moving quickly, decisively. I do hope some peace can be achieved in Ukraine and Russia. I think some thought should be given to, you know, what's the end game there, I think the end game will require some compromise on the part of both parties.
You've said that what you're solving at Tesla is an AI problem, not a transportation problem. And you talk about the next big disruption being AI. What can AI do to help combat climate change, particularly in this period, the short-term period, as we're transitioning?
Well, Tesla's goal from when we started it has always been to accelerate sustainability. So that is still our primary goal by far. We have a secondary goal, which is to solve at least real-world intelligence as it applies to self-driving cars, and then potentially, you know, with humanoid robots. So Tesla is in part an AI company, and increasingly an AI company, but is still primarily a sustainable energy company. I think AI. What will AI do? I don't think we need AI to solve sustainability. Mm-hmm. That is happening. It might help us accelerate it. But I think we should also be cautious about AI and just make sure that as we develop AI, that it is doesn't get out of control, and that the AI helps make the future better for humanity.
And that's something I know you're working quite a lot on.
I think we should be more worried about AI safety than we currently are.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, the future wars are really going to be, and we're seeing a taste of that in Ukraine, very much drone wars.
Mm-hmm.
So if your drones are better than their drones, then you win, basically, is what will happen.
Thus has it always been.
It hasn't been that, but will.
It will be. Final question, we've just got a minute. What keeps you up at night, and what are you doing about it? Or do you sleep soundly every night?
Well, there's the two main technical... I mean, I'm fundamentally a technologist. It's a kind of important, or engineer, too, so... You know, sometimes people call me like a businessman. I guess I have to do business. You have to have a group of people because I can't just do this in a garage by myself. But I'm fundamentally an engineer or technologist, and so the two technologies I'm focused on trying to ideally get done before the end of the year are getting our Starship to orbit, which I think is important for expanding consciousness beyond Earth and life beyond Earth. And then having the Tesla cars be able to do self-driving. Have self-driving in wide release, at least in the U.S., and hopefully potentially in Europe, depending on regulatory approval.